BBC presents Gordon Jackson in The Same River Twice, a serial thriller in 8 parts by Edward Boyd. Johnny Maxson, separated from his wife for 5 years, comes back to Scotland in response to an appeal from his mother-in-law. He learns that his wife has been missing for 3 months, and possibly, her mother fears, is dead. He agrees reluctantly to look for her, and meets with some strange reactions to his initial inquiries. He returns to his flat to find that he is not alone. The Same River Twice, Part 2.
Marine Division.
My name is Maxson, John Maxson. I'm in the top flat at number 78 Ruthven Gardens. And I have a problem.
What's your problem, sir?
A dead body. There used to be 2 things no one escaped. Now there are 3. Death, taxation, and television. Not even policemen are immune. And the way these ones moved round the flat, you kept looking for the non-existent cameras. And I thought, the 20th century has made everything, but everything, show business. They left me alone while they did whatever they do. I stood looking across and down at gardens, black as an old funeral. There were lit windows in the houses on the other side of the crescent. A long time ago, in one of those lit windows, I watched a little girl dance, alone, heartbreakingly. Then suddenly she stopped, rigid with guilt. Then a tall woman came into the lit window, and that was the end of that. But it was a man who walked into my lit window. Not too tall. Incredible blue Highland eyes. A dangerous, jolly face like a cattle auctioneer. His name was Inspector Wardlaw.
A few weak questions, Mr. Maxson.
I'm glad of that.
Is that so now?
Yes, I've only got a few wee answers.
Well, we'll see, we'll see. The human mind is a strange instrument. Sometimes we don't just know exactly how much we do know.
The ball's in your court, Inspector.
Oh, neatly put. I like a nice metaphor myself. Now, I take it you phoned in as soon as you found the deceased.
I did.
And I'm told you claim the deceased is completely unknown to you.
I never saw her before in my life.
Extraordinary.
Isn't it?
And her with a key.
I suppose she must have had.
Yes. What time did you go out tonight, Mr. Maxson?
I didn't.
Mr. Maxson, there's a law that says that what goes up must come down. There's another one, not quite so widely known, perhaps, that says anything that comes in must first have gone out.
I don't live here.
On the outside door, there is a brass plate that could do with the love of a good cleaning woman. It distinctly reads J. Maxson.
One of those things, I am J. Maxson. As it happens, so is my wife. J, as in Julia.
You and your wife do not live together?
Correct.
They tell me there's a lot of it about. Divorced?
No.
Separated?
No.
Just not living together?
Yes.
Very untidy. Very, very untidy.
What do you do on your day off, Inspector? Marriage guidance?
I have very few days off, Mr. Maxson.
Then for you, the problem of leisure isn't urgent.
So you don't live here, Mr. Maxson?
No.
Where do you live?
Number 11, Rue Champollion, Paris 5.
Long way to walk home if you miss the last bus?
And part of it over water.
Just so. How long have you been living there?
Just over 5 years.
You work there?
I do.
How do you earn your bread?
I do translations and editorial work for a firm of American publishers.
You'll be carrying a passport, no doubt?
No doubt. Just a minute. Here we are.
Thank you. So you haven't been in this country for 4 years and 10 months?
If that's what the passport says.
Oh, it does, it does. What made you come suddenly out of exile?
The untidiness you disapproved of just now.
Could you explain that a little more fully?
There's a girl in Paris I want to marry.
I see.
Our name is Solange Martinet, if it's of any interest to you.
Everything's grist that comes to the mill, as the saying goes. How would you spell all that?
S-O-L-A-N-G-E.
Yes.
Martinet, as in English, martinet.
Uh-huh. And her address?
The same as the one you have for me.
Did your wife know you were coming over here?
No.
You just decided to come on the spur of the moment, like.
I'm an impulse buyer, Inspector.
I am myself. When did you last have any contact with your wife?
Oh, about 3 months before I went to Paris.
Was it what you might call amicable?
It was what you might call a punch-up.
All these years and you still had a key to the flat. It's very interesting to a student of human nature like myself.
You mustn't dramatize, Inspector. I'm just one of these people. I can never throw things away.
Just so. I'm a bit like that, too. You didn't phone to announce you were coming here, did you?
No.
Why not?
Because she would have refused to see me.
If you were out of contact, how would you know that?
Oh, look, Inspector, it's a small world. I come across people in Paris, transients who know us both. They tell me things.
She was bitter, then?
That was the way it came to me.
Did she have reason to be?
Reason has nothing to do with these things, as you well know, Inspector.
Were you bitter, Mr. Maxson?
For a while. Then I decided not to make a career of it. A lot of your questions don't seem very relevant, Inspector.
A lot of them I have no right to ask at all.
That girl in the bedroom...
She had a key. You have a key. The good Lord knows how many more people have keys. I hate doors that have too many keys.
Neatly put. I like a nice metaphor too, Inspector.
It's a pity they don't stand up too well in court. You say you don't know this dead girl you found?
She's a total stranger to me.
Well, we'll be asking for a statement from you.
I'll come and see you in the morning, if that's all right.
Oh, just fine, just fine. You'll appreciate that I'll have to have a word with your wife as well.
Quite.
If you see her before
I'll tell her.
Is there an address I can reach you at?
Here.
Well, of course, you know your own business.
Inspector, I've got to see her, too, and where better to wait?
Well,
naturally, I won't stay here tonight. I'll come back sometime tomorrow. If you people want in, I'll leave the key for you. In a place my wife and I used to leave it when we hadn't two keys to rub together.
All right, then.
The girl I found...
Yes?
Was it what I thought it was?
If you thought it was an overdose of sleeping pills... Yes. That's what it was.
I showed him where I would leave the key. And eventually he went away, and all his policemen with him, and left me to ponder the great Scottish irony of how within 2 centuries the wild Highland outlaws degenerated into coppers. The place was as still as the tomb it had recently and temporarily been. My watch said 1:16 in a polite Swiss whisper. I was in need of care and protection I knew just wasn't on. I went through to the room that sheltered the telephone.
Hello?
Helen, this is Johnny. Were you asleep?
I was reading in bed.
I have to see you.
What's happened, Johnny?
I don't know. Something weird.
It's not Julia?
No, it's not Julia. I'd rather not talk about it on the phone.
You'd better come out.
I'll be with you as soon as I can.
Right.
Outside, it was misting up, and the taxis lined up at the rank looked like some huge black articulated insect. In the first one, the driver sat, stunned into coma by a transistor set, from which erupted the noise of a late-night disc jockey conspiring with a dreary group to wring the last lira out of Liverpool. Then I was back again at the beginning. The rusty gate with its rusty phrase, like a robin with a strep throat. The unflat path, the predatory rambling roses, the bell. She was dressed when she opened the door, and her hair was pulled back neatly from her forehead. She had marvelous bones, a And in that light, she looked like 35 instead of twice that plus. There was tea ready, which I needed like I needed a hole in the head. I told my plaintive tale and waited.
What did this poor girl look like?
Not exactly poor.
Nobody does nowadays. I meant her physical appearance.
A dark girl, quite pretty. 5'2" or 3", slim. About 20, I'd say. Could be younger. She had that art school drama college look. Well, that means nothing nowadays either. Ring any bells?
No. I don't understand this, Johnny.
Welcome aboard.
I don't understand that either.
It was my way of saying that we're in the same boat.
What now, Johnny?
Well, it's a new situation, isn't it?
Johnny.
Whether we like it or not, I'm redundant.
No.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, stinking, filthy, rotten, unfair, but a girl has to kill herself to bring some sense into this business.
Don't say that.
Well, it's true, isn't it? You asked me to find Julia, and I advise you to go to the police. You tell me you don't want the police brought in, then this girl commits suicide in Julia's flat.
I don't know anything about this girl.
Oh, for heaven's sake, be realistic, Helen. This girl had a key to the flat, therefore Julia knew her. Therefore the police are going to want to talk to Julia, therefore they're going to find her, which is what you wanted. Or is it?
I don't know, Johnny. I don't know.
There's something terribly wrong here.
You promised.
I have the craziest feeling that I'm being got at.
Oh, that's silly.
Look, Helen, so I made you a promise, all right, but that was before this girl showed up dead. That changes everything, wipes out a lot of things. Already I'm in deeper than I wanted to be. Already I've lied to the police.
Why did you lie to them?
What? To buy time for you. I focused them on me so I could put you in the picture before they got round to you.
I'm sorry, Johnny. Do they know you've been here to see me?
No.
What did you tell them?
Oh, I told them I came over to discuss the possibility of a divorce with Julia.
You didn't mention about Julia being missing?
No, I didn't.
When they come to see me, I won't mention it either.
But why not? Why not?
Because I want you to find her.
Any moment now I'm going to wake up with a loud, piercing shriek.
I want you to find her.
Look, Helen, you don't have a happy ending complex, do you? You haven't got something going on in your head about me finding Julia, the two of us falling into each other's arms and all that technicolor jazz.
Please, Johnny.
Because it's not on, Helen. It is positively not on. No man bathes in the same river twice.
You promised me a week of your time.
Oh, yes.
I'm holding you to that promise.
The police
You never broke a promise to me yet. Everyone else did, but never you.
I'll keep my promise if you'll answer me one question.
I'm accepting no conditions,
I'll
Johnny.
Ask the question anyway. What really happened to Sarah?
Sarah?
Yes, Sarah. Your granddaughter. My daughter.
I wrote and told you what happened.
Yes. Months after the event.
That wasn't my fault. Nobody knew where to find
what
you.
What happened, Helen?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I saw Bill Ferguson and his wife earlier tonight. Rachel was saying some very funny things.
Rachel always said more than her prayers.
Rachel
said... If you want to find out what happened to your daughter, find Julia.
I'll find Julia.
Johnny.
I'll find her because you've just given me something that's been lacking up till now. A reason for finding her. I walked with my reason for finding Julia through the ugly suburban houses that were simply mortgages you slept in. Innocent little cars stood everywhere, waiting to strangle tomorrow's city. There were no taxis as I walked towards the city center. No cars, no bikes, no scooters, no dogs, no cats, no orphans.
If you want to find out what happened to your daughter, find Julia.
Then suddenly there was light and people, if you'll pardon the expression. The night people of a coffee stall. People with twitches. People with scars. People with malice. People with obsessions. People with razors. People with diamond mines to sell. People with everything but futures. One of them came up to me. He was the ghost of a jaunty little man.
You look like a gentleman.
You need your eyes tested.
No, Oh, I'd like a man with a sense of humor.
Beat it.
Have you ever known the pangs of hunger, sir?
I invented them. Now beat it.
You must not speak to people like that, sir.
No?
No.
Why not?
Because they have souls. And because, well, they might have suffered.
And just what have you suffered, friend?
Loss. Loss of fortune. Loss of dignity. Loss of position. Family. And for a few years, loss of freedom.
Yes, happening wherever you look. What were you?
A lawyer.
Disbarred?
For embezzlement.
Of course, you were innocent.
I was guilty.
You're beginning to interest me.
Thank you for your patronage.
Tell me, what happens in Scotland about fatal accidents?
They come under the Fatal Accidents Inquiry Act.
Go on.
A report is made by the local police to the Procurator Fiscal of the area in which the accident has occurred. He, in turn, passes it on to the Crown in Edinburgh.
And if nothing else happens?
Then the Crown has decided that the accident was bona fide.
And if someone later, much later, wants to make inquiries?
One could always approach the Procurator Fiscal or the local police.
I believe you actually were a lawyer.
That advice will cost you a cup of coffee and a sausage roll.
That would appear to bring up a rather nice technical point.
Oh, I'd like to hear it.
You're disbarred, aren't you?
Yes.
Which means that you're forbidden to practice professionally under pain of punishment.
Quite so.
Now, if you accepted a cup of coffee and a sausage roll from me, it might be construed as practicing professionally.
Possibly.
I'd hate to get you into trouble.
I'm very sorry for you, sir. You are no longer a member of the human race.
Oh, wait a minute.
I have no minutes to spare for you. And I'd rather starve than accept.
Accepted from me then, Mr. Todhunter.
Oh. Good morning, Inspector, and thank you.
Cup of coffee and a sausage roll, Charlie. Can I get something for you, Mr. Maxson?
I'm just going.
I'll walk a little way with you. Here you are, Mr. Todhunter. Pay Charlie with us.
Oh, thank you, Inspector.
Let us go, Mr. Maxson.
We walked along in silence for a few moments. Somewhere in the dark, the day was stirring. The streets broadened out and there were trees. It dawned on me that we were walking towards the flat. Certainly didn't expect to see you back there.
Look, I have no prejudices. Some of my best friends are coffee stalls.
I can imagine.
An interesting conversation you were having with Todhunter.
I was testing his credentials.
You always do that?
Don't you?
Oh, well, yes, but with me now it's what you might call in the way of business.
With me it's just self-defense.
So the accident you were talking about is to be regarded as purely hypothetical?
Straight off the top of the head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you found out who the girl was?
We have indeed.
Who was she?
Sandra Bailey, age 20.
What did she do?
According to her mother, she was a nice girl who fell among beatniks.
Well, she opted out all right.
She was going to have a baby.
We keep the world going, but sometimes the price seems a bit high.
That's the first compassionate thing I've heard you say.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning, Inspector. My resistance is low.
Any word about your wife?
None.
I'd still like a wee word with her.
I'll tell her when I see her.
I'd be obliged.
Look, Inspector, this is an open and shut case of suicide, isn't it?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Then why all the dire hints and nods and winks?
Have you ever heard tell of the Dark Number?
What is it, a pipe tune?
There are crimes we know about and solve. There are crimes known to us we can do nothing about. And there are crimes we never know anything about at all. These ones are called the Dark Number. And the good Lord alone knows how great that number is in any given year.
And that annoys you.
It does. Oh, yes, it does. It black affronts me.
Well, how about you? A crusader already.
I was always taught never to opt out.
You're like these sad middle-aged men who still feel guilty because they never fought in the Spanish Civil War.
That poor girl tonight.
What about her?
There was a marijuana cigarette in the lining of her coat.
Don't be so square, Inspector. They come with the gear these days. Why do you think they're called reefer jackets?
Another thing, about a fortnight ago, somebody had given her a terrible beating.
Little bits of the Dark Number?
I'll find out.
I'm sure you will.
I'll find out. And if your wife's involved, she'll go the distance.
Now, wait a minute.
She'll go the distance, Maxson.
All right, roast her over a slow fire if you like, but don't get at me.
I was not getting at you.
I had the eeriest feeling you were, Inspector.
What accident were you talking about at the coffee store?
I told you, all I was doing was taking the mickey out of a layabout.
I think you're lying.
Oh, you better get off this dark number, Kick. You're going spare.
Now it's your own way, Maxon.
Good night, Inspector.
Not good night, Maxon, nor good morning. Just au revoir.
There was hardly enough of the night left to stub out in an ashtray. So I made wearily for the flat and all those stairs again. And perhaps at the end of them, sleep. But no. I let myself into the flat and a joyous noise. There were two of them, sitting on the floor of the large room that overlooked the gardens. The girl was standard Dollybird, the contemporary kitten face. Long black stockings, surmounted by a charcoal drawing of two eyes. The boy wore long hair and clothes he'd got from a lavender cowboy. He was so high camp you could have launched the final attempt on Everest from him.
Greetings, man.
Hi.
How's the scene?
Swinging.
Like great. Oh, I'm Jojo. This is Mary.
Hello.
Hello, Jojo. Hello, Mary.
You dig jazz, man?
Jazz and me came up the river together.
You a musician or something?
Oh, not me. Can't even do the three-chord trick.
Never seen you here before.
I haven't been there this long time.
Looking for Julia, huh?
Sort of.
She's a gasser, is Julia.
Yeah.
A gasser, man. Most birds are a drag, but not Julia. Eh, Mary?
You're not kidding.
Oh, man, listen to that cat wailing.
I see you've got keys.
Everybody's got keys to Julia's pad.
She doesn't know why at the end she puts a sign on the door.
Yankees go home. That pot you're smoking.
Uh-huh.
Where'd you get it?
A place.
And that's what I thought.
Want some?
No, thank you. Staying long?
Oh, a couple of days, maybe. Maybe a week. Who cares?
Like you say, who cares?
You staying long?
Depends on Julia.
Oh, Julia's great.
Yeah. Wherever she is.
She gets around. Man, Julia is free.
Now that could be truer than you think.
Eh? I'm not reading you, man.
Oh, don't let it bug you.
Here. Are you sending me up?
Why'd I want to do that? All I'm interested in is where Julia's at.
Hasn't been around lately.
Down at the cottage, perhaps?
No. We've just come back from there. Stayed a month.
And she never showed?
Not once.
Well, looks like I'm on a deuce.
Looks like it.
Ah, well, plenty more birds around.
Not like Julia.
There's Sandra Bailey, for instance.
Ah, she's a drag,
stuck
man.
Up.
A drag.
I liked her. But maybe she's spoken for already. Does she have a boyfriend?
You're a bit old for a dad.
Oh, Georgie, how can you say that?
Shut up and put that record off. Here. Who are you?
The name's Johnny Maxon.
No.
Then you're the guy.
That's right. The husband of Julia, the well-known gasser.
Look, what's all this jazz about Sandra Bailey?
She got wasted tonight.
What's that mean?
It means your slang's out of date, son. It also means she's dead.
She's what?
Oh, no.
Just a few hours ago, in the bedroom through there.
Come on, Mary. Let's get out of here.
Oh, no, you don't.
Wait, let me go.
Now, be good or I'll take away your cowboy boots and set you afoot.
Oh. I don't know anything about it.
Sandra Bailey's boyfriend. Come on,
tell
come on.
Him,
Jojo. I'm no stoolie.
And I'm no copper. There are no one who's very interested in these funny fags you're smoking.
Tell him, Jojo. Tell him.
I'm no stoolie.
Tell me. And you can both blow as soon as you like or we'll go to the police and let them handle it.
I think that'll kill me.
Well?
His name's Tom Armstrong.
You're joking.
It's true, Mr. Honest.
But Tom Armstrong's old enough to be a...
Sandra preferred mature men.
Scram.
But let's...
Scram before I change my mind.
Mister.
You too.
Yes, mister.
Look. If I ever get a chance...
I know, I know. You'll show me your karate lessons.
Julia's too good for you.
He went off with his wounded adolescents. And suddenly I was tired to the bone in my backbone and the bone behind that. I pulled back the curtains and opened the windows to get rid of the acrid smell. Below and across the road, I could see a man in a telephone booth. He was dialing. And, weirdly enough, as he finished dialing, the phone rang. Hello?
Could this be Tom Armstrong?
And if it was?
Can you hear your doorbell ringing?
Just a minute. Yeah, I hear it ringing now.
Two friends of mine.
What's on their minds?
They're going to kill you.
The second part of The Same River Twice, a serial in 8 parts by Edward Boyd, was produced for the BBC by Eddie Fraser.